Hello, Spacers. From Austin, Texas, I'm Christopher Schmidt, and on today's show, I'm joined again with Glenda Sims. Glenda is the Accessibility Practice Manager at TQ Systems. And before that, and for all time, she's known as Glenda, the Accessibility Good Witch. So, she loves accessibility, she's been practicing accessibility, she evangelizes accessibility for the web and mobile. That's who she is, and she loves it, and we always enjoy having her on the show. And in fact, it's been 3 years, actually, since Glenda was on Not Breaking the Space Show, so I shouldn't really say all the time, but when she is here, we always enjoy it. So, and I think that's 3 years is plenty enough time to get caught up with what's happening in the world with accessibility. Anyway, before we get started, some notes on where I'll be and some words from our sponsors. CSS DevConf 2016, the Alamo, it is taking place this October 17th and 18th in San Antonio. That is where the Alamo is. This is where you should be. You learn the latest by hanging out with the greatest. Chris Coyer, Jen Simmons, Snook, Trent Walton, Sarah Drasner, many more from people who were picked in a double-blind voting based off the nature of their topics. You'll learn what's where wind is blowing for the front end workflows. So this is where you want to learn what's going to be happening next year. Register now at cssdevconf.com. Again, that's cssdevconf.com. And also, you can pick up a post conference workshop too with Snook, Rachel Neighbors, or Wes Boss. So you can learn from about SMACs, CSS with Snook, animations with Rachel, or React.js with Wes. So take a look at that at cssdevconf.com. If you don't want to travel, we're doing a web and mobile accessibility conference September 4th and 5th. You can register now and get recordings for free at a11ysummit.com. That's A11Y. That's a shorthand for accessibility, so you don't have to type the whole thing out and mistype it like I always do. So it's a11ysummit.com. And also, Fancy Hands is a team of virtual assistants ready at your fingertips. For example, if you need a plumber, have them research the best plumbers in your area, and then you can also have them schedule one while you're at work or taking that well-earned nap. Fancy Hands is letting me give you 50% off their first month when you sign up at christopher.org/fancyhands. Also, you can set it, forget it with Not Breaking Space Show. So whenever a new episode is ready to go, you can have it delivered right into your email box by signing up at newsletter.notbreakingspace.tv. As always, you can find show notes discussed along with links and other things at notbreakingspace.tv. And be sure to follow me on Twitter at Telject, TELEJACT. As always, thank you for subscribing, liking, and telling others about Non-Breaking Space Show on iTunes. Now, on with the show. I was actually trying to find out when you were on the show last, and that was a long time ago.
Probably so.
Yeah. April 2013.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of fun's happened since then, huh?
A lot of fun. Yeah, well, a lot of stuff has happened since then. So.
Yep.
Cool. And just try to see where you were at. They were like, you're still at the queue.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Absolutely. So are you still the senior accessibility consultant?
So we have grown, and the role that I'm playing now is I am the accessibility practice manager. So I define how we do accessibility at the company.
Okay.
And we have over 50 accessibility experts on staff, mm-hmm. and that's just the professional services side of the house. So we've grown. In 2013, there were probably 5 of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like every expert person I know works at the queue now. It's like that. It's like, I'm going to leave. I'm going to work for someone else. I'm like, where are you going to go? To queue. Like, okay.
To queue.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We were in a really large growth period over the last 3 years without a doubt.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that it's like, it was like this weird kind of like thing. So professional services, what else do you guys offer?
So we actually have two major areas where we provide client support, and that is the professional services, my side, which is going to be anything related to a human being helping you. So it can be consulting, it can be training, it can be embedding an expert with you, anything related to, you know, something a human's going to work through. And then we also are looking to make sure that our clients don't have to use as much manpower, because accessibility can be done in some ways more efficiently with automated tools. Mm-hmm. And so we have an entire software side of our process, which we've open sourced our accessibility rules engine. We believe that as moving the community forward in accessibility, just like the browsers agree on a standard for how they're going to render HTML and CSS and how JavaScript's going to work, why can't we do that with WCAG standard automation rules as well? So we've open sourced our rules engine, and then we have software that can help clients use accessibility testing tools in all their different stages of design and development. So software side of the house, services side of the house.
Okay, cool. And so what type of things do your software tools, like what type of stages do the tools attack or like report on, or do they report on? Do they fix things? Do they...
They report for the most part. I have seen some tools, and in the past, DQ may have even tried it, where there have been some attempts to, oh, we'll find the problem and we'll fix it for you. And, you know, I don't really know of many developers that want you messing with their code.
Right.
They don't mind you, you know, running a lint and telling me something's wrong, but hey, that's my code. Don't go fixing it. So right now our tools are way more focused on helping you understand as soon as you can in your process. So we don't have anything automated in the design phase. We definitely have services that we offer during requirements phase and design phase. But once you get into the coding phase, we have a number of tools that can be integrated into the Agile process. Whether that's at the build stage, calling our Axe engine for anything that can be tested automatedly. So you know that the obvious accessibility errors are clean because you made it past that. You can also test it. You can use Axe in the browser if you want to test it that way. But I really am finding that a number of our customers are wanting to put it into their build process.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. I guess day to day, what is your role as a accessibility program manager? Like what type of challenges do you see day in, day out?
It's been really interesting in the field of accessibility. I think I've always known this, that trying to interpret WCAG consistently between two human beings is a challenge. Even when one of those human beings is the person that you learned from. So I learned this in my early days. I grew up under Sharon Rush, John Slayton, and others. And as we would, the three of us, test a website, we'd get into a number of debates about, is this a failure or is this a best practice? And so one of the things that I continue to work on is creating consistency and accuracy in the work that we do, and now spread that over the minds of over 50 people. Right. That are around the globe. And what I'm excited about that type of work is it's intellectually stimulating. Mm-hmm. There's lots of debates. And in some ways, it's something I do miss my edu.org days, because, oh, how I just want all of this consistency and accuracy to be shared globally. Mm-hmm. because really take 10 accessibility experts, have them test a web page and compare the reports.
Yeah.
And unless you have a consistency process in place, 50 shades of accessibility.
50 shades.
Yeah. That's what it is. And, yeah. And so we've come so far, and, that's one of the things that I continue to pursue. And I'm not sure that it's ever going to end because of the way WCAG is written. WCAG is written to not be, it's written to be technology agnostic. And so it's not written in such technical detail. It's written in English, mostly.
Yeah.
And until they define every single word that they use in the normative part of WCAG, there's going to be differences in interpretation. What did they mean? What did they mean by that word? Mm-hmm. And so I will say the W3C is doing a fantastic job of helping clarify a number of things, but there's still areas that are mushy and gray. And I'll stop there because you might have questions.
How can we have accessibility standard when even experts disagree with each other?
That is an excellent question. And one of the things I think is that these standards, they have that push and pull. If we make the standard too specific, then it's going to be tied to the technology at the moment the standard was passed. Mm-hmm. And so I understand their need for what they're doing. And what I see is there's some beautiful notes that are going into WCAG right now. They're clarification notes. And so as these questions come up, you'll see notes in green that clarify. So for me, the problem's painful because I'm sitting in an organization. We're currently working with over 35 different .com companies, and that's not even the whole of what we're touching. Mm-hmm. And I've got 50 people underneath me, and you know, it's hundreds and hundreds of pages that are being reviewed. And so all the tough questions come to me. So I'm feeling that pain. Is it as big a problem in someone else's daily life? No, it's not. I'm just the funnel that it's coming through. Is it less than 20% of the problem? Absolutely. It's less than 20% of the problem. When a client's coming to me, I don't want to give them 80% work. I want to make an A. And the cool thing is that what we're learning as we're having to come with consistent, accurate quality work to clients in all different fields is we're sharing that information with the W3C. Mm-hmm. We're saying that the way this is written, whether it's 1.3.1 or 4.1.2, that these two areas, even for experts, we have a lot of debate. I ran a survey the other day where I surveyed 30 of my experts. I'm not talking about somebody that's, you know, in the first year or two. I'm talking about people with over 5 years under their belt or 15 years under their belt, that range. And I'm getting a 50% split on whether something is a fail or not. It's a real edge case. And it's coming out of 4.1.2 name role value. So I report that to the W3C and I go, okay, here's where I think it should be interpreted and why I don't think it's a fail. Can you confirm for me that you at the W3C agree with that also? And can you clarify that? And I have to be careful because I can't go running to the W3C and go, can you solve my problem? Because, you know, they don't work for me. But if I'm having that kind of results amongst really good experts, everybody's having that problem. So we are reporting those things. And we're not just thinking about it from an expert perspective, because we really need to simplify it. If every time you need to look at a page, you need somebody with 10 years experience to see if it's accessible, that's not sustainable. So in WCAG Next, I believe there will be some proposals that some of these success criteria that are a little mushy or have had problems with interpretation, even amongst experts, that we can clarify them better. So I'm optimistic.
Okay. Well, let's just take the inverse for a second and just be super positive.
Yeah.
And talk about what are things in the specifications that everyday Joe developer can easily implement accessibility wise. Like, is it just like images and alt descriptions? Is there what sort of things should they say? Like, I should not have a problem implementing these types of things into my workflow without having like this gray area. Because it's just like a low hanging fruit is basically what I'm asking for. Like, what type of things that are out there?
And when we look at it, it's really interesting that not only are we focusing on accuracy and consistency, but we're actually getting to the stage of efficiency. And so one of the first things that I want people to know how to do, and it's not a gray area, is a keyboard accessible? You know, that's pretty black or white. Can you do it without your mouse or keypad or without your trackpad? Straightforward. And a lot of people that haven't been introduced to accessibility, they don't know to do that. It's pretty dang easy to test. So that's one of the first most powerful things that developers can do. Of course, there's always the low-hanging fruit, like you said, of adding appropriate alt text to informative or active images, making sure that your form fields are labeled, using tables for data structure, really following the semantics of HTML, separating your presentation from your semantic content. And those things are non-debatable. Captions, really straightforward, what to do with captions. So,
right. And captions, I just hate to break into here. Mm-hmm. Just, but captions they've changed within the last few years since I guess we talked about, captions for video, I can understand with YouTube, you can actually upload captions.
Yeah.
Have a YouTube. Is there something else I would need to do for HTML5 video that'd be different, or?
So one of the captions the concepts are all still the same of what's required. The tools to help us caption have grown. Most importantly, there is progress in voice-to-text recognition. It's still not at a quality where I choose to use voice-to-text automation. I still use qualified stenographers, captioners, humans, to translate it. And then I'll go over it to make sure the quality is there. But it really depends on the topic. So many times when I'm captioning something, it's very technical. Yeah. And so you're not going to get speech to text is not going to be
right. Good. Yeah, I bet in terms of one of the things I used to tell people is get cooking dirty captioning, because YouTube would do automatic transcriptioning, and it'd be this, I don't know how good it is now, but a few years ago, it was just terrible. But what I liked about it was that it would give you timestamps for free.
Yeah.
And then you could actually go in and clean it up within an hour or two. It depends on how long I'm going to text you.
And then that's kind of where the question is. The question is, does it take you longer to clean up the mess? Mm-hmm. Or is it better to listen to the content, mm-hmm. type up a transcript without timestamps, and throw the transcript against the automatic engines? Because once you've got approximately the text transcript, there are a lot of free engines out there. YouTube has one. You throw a text transcript without timestamps against the video,
okay,
and the video can then use voice-to-text recognition on that.
Oh, nice. Timestamps. Okay, cool.
So it's a lot better on that. And I myself have been cleaning up some captions that were done by a professional captioning house, and they did a really good job. But, I wanted it perfect. And many times in a group setting or in a casual setting, people don't enunciate their words completely. So you're still going to have misses.
Yes. Enunciation is always good. So
mm-hmm.
He laughs knowingly. Cool. Yeah. So, and then with HTML5, there's also the ability to embed SRT files, like the captioning files and different languages files for HTML5 video and stuff like that. So is that's still the same, right? That's not okay. So,
and one of the things that I am seeing more and more of is, and I thought of this back in WCAG 1.0 before 2.0 was even there. You know, we talk about content needing to be paused, stopped, or hidden. And then we have captions. Well, captions are rolling at the same rate the speakers are talking. It's timed content. And so there's kind of a gap right now. WCAG 2.0 AAA lets you get by with just having the captions attached to the video. And what we really need for excellent experience is that full transcript that you could download and read at your pace. Mm. Not at the pace that the speaker's talking, but at your pace. Because English may not be your first language.
Right.
Or many other reasons. That is something I would like to see become more commonplace. And I love many of the tools that are creating what we call hot transcripts. So you upload the transcript and now it becomes searchable, and it's almost like the cartoons with Follow the Bouncing Ball. You can search it. You can, there's just multiple layers of being able to access it. So I like the advancements that I've seen there.
Okay. So cause usually I find that when people, as like web developers talk to web developers, so I usually find that when they do captioning, they usually have that full article already, like the video, they have the captioning, and then there's people who have captioning and they don't provide
put the transcript up. It's not required to put the transcript up, and so I think that that's a gap that wasn't really considered. And one of the reasons why is from my perspective, when we look at how accessibility has evolved, the two areas that got the most attention first were people that are blind and people that cannot hear. Mm-hmm. And the ones that came in and you've seen less support, but the support is growing, keyboard only support. It's there, but it wasn't primary, at least the way I was trained. It wasn't in the forefront. It was almost like an extra thing because the blind person needed it. And then cognitive. And as cognitive is rising and really moving forward, there's very little in WCAG 2.0 about cognitive. But we're starting to see we were only thinking about the people that were deaf when we thought about the captions. Now we need to think about somebody that needs to read it at a rate that's comfortable to them. Oh, we're going to have to add it. So I would conceive that it might come into WCAG next, which is going to add cognitive, mobile, and low vision extensions.
Oh, wow. What type of things are you putting in there for low vision extensions?
So low vision is really fascinating. There's a gentleman at, he was a professor at California State University, Long Beach, and his name is Wayne Dick, and he happens to be a computer programmer professor that also has low vision. And so he is doing all kinds of fabulous research. one of the things that he has explained to me, and it's funny because I've always cared, but it wasn't until he had me go through the experiment that I was like, oh my God, that was awful. Being able to control the font size, the font itself, the color, the line spacing, the width, and to not have things where you have to scroll left and right is really important to a person with low vision so that they can tune it to what they need. And I knew all those things. I conceptually knew every single one of them. And then I went through and got to test his research project where he is having me read paragraphs of scientific information, and then I have to answer questions afterwards.
Oh, man.
And I'm first going through it where I can see everything without scrolling left, right. And then I have to go through the second with a different paragraph of information, like I'm taking an SAT test or something, right. And I have to scroll left or right. And I was like, oh my God, this is horrible.
Right.
So right now it is not against WCAG to have left, right scrolling. It's sad. It's not recommended to have left, right scrolling, but it's not a brick wall to accessibility. Right. However, I expect in the low vision extension that it will be there as a requirement.
Okay. Yeah. And this with responsible design, though, I feel like that's going to be a big issue, especially with tablets and, with phone surfing, just because of, just surfing around on my own. It's just, you have to actually go in there and with your thumb and resize things, and it's a pain in the butt.
And the pinch and zoom, and all of a sudden, because we really are consuming so much content on these smaller screens, we are feeling the pain that people with low vision have been feeling for 15, 20 years.
Right.
And so it's one of those things where I really feel accessibility is growing up because it's finally getting to those topics. And when we look at the population of people with disabilities, low vision is a giant group of people in comparison to the ones that we're already serving. And when we get into cognitive, oh my goodness, we are really going to make a difference. And, I remember when cognitive used to scare me because I'm a psych major and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I care, but how am I supposed to help? What is it that I'm supposed to do? And it was overwhelming. And then I went to a wonderful session at CSUN that was led by Rich Schwarzfeger. From IBM. And in that session, he and Lisa were talking about, let's start here. And they defined a couple of different types of cognitive disabilities, not saying that's all they're going to focus on, but let's start with these. Let's start with focus issues that can often result in someone that may have ADD. Let's start with dyslexia. Let's start with those. And there were about three or four others that they mentioned. And so this problem that had felt overwhelming to me before, just like anything else, when you break it down into manageable pieces, became something exciting to go investigate. And in the past year, I've actually had the opportunity to do usability testing with people with those exact cognitive disabilities and learned when accessibility is on the mark, what happens? Good accessible design leads to better design for all. And sure enough, I experienced that same thing when testing for dyslexia and focus issues.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that's one of my things that it took me a while to learn was that people actually separate accessibility with usability. And I feel like there's the same thing almost, So that's pretty good. But yeah. And like Joe Clark, who always said like, who wouldn't want accessibility in their website? Who wouldn't want more people going to their website?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think the real catch is if we're unrealistic in what we ask for from an accessibility standpoint, so that we actually prevent creativity and new things, that's where you get the negative reaction. And so there's this balance of, yes, we need to have access for all human beings. That's what Tim Berners-Lee created this for, not just for some people to have access, but for all people to have access. Right. But to think carefully about maybe the responsive web design perspective, which is, okay, you can have this content, whether you're coming at it from your phone or your laptop or your tablet or your refrigerator. Yeah. It just may not be the exact same experience. And it may be a slightly better experience on one platform or the other, but you still get the core content and functionality.
To risk being negative, what are the things that, you said 80-20% split between 8% being WCAG being good and easy to implement? What's the 20% things that are kind of hard that we should be on the watch out for? Like, saying like these things might be more subjective, I assume more subjective and hard to follow.
Yeah, you know, there's one part that I would like some more clarification on, and it's 1.3.1, and it talks about semantics. And I love the semantic web. I love everything that we do in that direction. But if we require from an accessibility standpoint all the semantics to be in place, even when not a single assistive technology does anything with a semantic tag, what are we doing? You know, I mean, I want to be pragmatic. And so that one worries me a little bit. And the other one, I'm not going to say it's the gray area. I'm going to pivot on you.
Okay.
When WCAG 2.0 was written, ARIA was still a sparkle in Rich Schwarzenegger's eye. Okay, he had been working on it, but it really wasn't out being truly played with by many, many people yet. We've come a long way since then. And so what I'm excited about is ARIA filling many of those gaps that's allowing the creativity that at some points had been suppressed in earlier versions of accessibility. And ARIA just blows that door wide open. Where we have a little bit of a gap right now is WCAG 2.0 was written before ARIA was even walking, you know, if we think of it as a child. And I expect WCAG next to really pick up and embrace some of those pieces. And, you know, I was thinking about how important it is to not restrict growth and creativity on the web. So I want to make sure that accessibility, if accessibility is stopping somebody from curing cancer or saving people, that's not good for society.
Right. So, like, you don't want it to stop the message from getting out if it's right. So you just want, if it's like stop the message from getting out because of accessibility concerns, then that's not really being accessible.
And for anybody with a disability, they have equal right to get that message too. And so be creative, find the solution. But the solution isn't don't do it at all. The solution is do it, be creative, be out there, and let's find the way to truly make it accessible. Don't limit ourselves.
It's really hard for me to have a follow up question after that pep talk. Cool. I do want to mention that there was an article by Simple Accessible, is that what it is? About tabs and REI and, as I say, REI, sorry. REI, sorry. About it. It seems like, was it, I think it was the phrase was that, that throwing out was, the bathwater, I guess. With
That was the phrase that I used with you. Yeah. I think what happened there is that.
And just to back up for a second, just so we set the table a little bit, is just that. And so is an article written for Simple Accessible. We'll put a link in the show notes. But basically just say like, oh, here's folder tabs. And here's solutions, you know, to make it more accessible to navigate. Is that right? And then, but then we put the ARIA tags in there and it becomes unusable. And so so their solution was to like just not use it or.
Is that right? It is. And I think that what happened, I have other members of my team that looked at that really closely. And so I'm reporting back to you at a high level.
Okay.
And so if I get anything wrong, I'm going to apologize in advance.
Okay.
All right. So this is my understanding.
No problem.
What we did is we had a group of our experts, including our blind accessibility experts, look very deeply at this problem. And while there are some gaps there, this is like saying, don't use CSS, still use table-based layout because CSS isn't working perfectly yet everywhere. It's like ARIA is the future. If we say, I won't use it till it's perfect, how are we going to report back what needs to be done?
Right.
And so I do not think the solution is don't use ARIA. And I will admit that I was slow to join the ARIA bandwagon. You know, before it became a recommended spec, I was like, no, I can't use it yet. It's not finalized. And, I was at a meeting with Ann Abbott, accessibility lunch in Austin. And she like looked me straight in the eye and she says, we are using it right now and you need to be using it right now. And I was like, okay. And she showed it to me. And it's like, do you refuse to use a new browser or a new operating system? And, you know, what's your comfort level with a little bit of cruft? You know, the web's not going to stand still. Right. So we have to be continue to look at that. And ARIA, I literally think it's amazing.
And then my question to you is like, ARIA needs work improvement, you know, sounds like. So are you talking with browser vendors or are they just talking to W3C? But it seems like it'd be more practical, you know, to talk to W3C and, you know, like people like DQ and other vendors like that.
We're very active in the W3C. I can't give you the count of people. John Folio could tell you because he runs that for me. But one of the most important things is when we look at this problem of what's causing the problem, is it the browser not doing something to spec? Is it that the spec's not clear? Is it actually the browser handled it properly, but there is a bug in the AT, and it's not even a bug in all the screen readers. It's a bug in one. So tracking down and figuring out where's the problem. And one of the things that frustrates me to no end is when the problem gets laid at the foot of the innocent developers who didn't write the spec, didn't make the browser and didn't make the screen reader. But you know what? There's a way for them to code a hack. So let's get 10 million developers around the world to code the hack as opposed to getting the AT vendor to fix it. What? That's crazy talk. So, and the AT vendors are very open to this. It's very open. And the browser vendors are too. So that's exactly what we do. And I've got many people on team that do that in an official capacity. They may be doing it at W3C meetings. And that doesn't stop a single one of them from doing it from their individual emails as well.
Okay. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I just feel like it's been the browser renaissance of like last few years of us, you know, like you can see how it was slow going with the picture tag and the picture element and all that stuff like that. But I just feel like there's like, you know, whole generation of browser vendors who built web pages are now making browsers. And so there's more of a active browser development than there were, say, after the .com crash, right? So, and there was like no one doing anything with the browsers. So, Cool. I think that's about it for me. Do you have any parting comments? Do you think?
No, I am just looking forward to the Accessibility Summit coming up in September.
Okay. And I always say thank you very much whenever we talk about it, because without your prodding, we would not be doing it. So.
Well, I appreciate you doing it, and it continues to inspire me. So thank you.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So check it out, online Accessibility Summit. And where can people find you online?
I am GoodWitch on Twitter, and I work at DEQUE.com.
Awesome. Again, thanks so much, and talk to you soon. Hopefully sooner than 3 years.
Yes, definitely. Okay.